Okay, so we are continuing with our consideration of Paul's epistle to the Romans. We are in chapter 7, and now we have verse 15 through the end, and I highly doubt we will cover all this. I am expecting a lot of conversation this evening, but then again, I've expected that before and got out of here half an hour early, so we'll see what happens. Starting with verse 15. For I do not understand my own actions. For I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now if I do what I do not want, I agree with the law that it is good. So now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. So I find it to be a law that when I want, So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inner being. But I see in my members another law waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself serve the law of God with my mind, but with my flesh I serve the law of sin. Okay. So this is the last part of chapter 7, which, as you'll recall, is part of the bigger section that began way back in chapter 6 and will continue on through the end of chapter 8. And Paul has been talking about the law and its relationship to him. We discussed over the last couple weeks about how ignorance is no excuse, but when you do become aware of the law, it takes hold of you because now you no longer have ignorance to claim, not that you had to begin with. And so now Paul is continuing with this, and we get to verse 15. For I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Okay. Now, over the past several months, what year now that we've gone over this, one thing I've continued to mention is man's natural condition when they are born. Someone please tell me what that is. No hablé español.
You're born into sin.
Thank you. They are naturally born sinners. They have a sinful nature born within them. They are born evil. As we've talked before, you don't need to teach someone to be violent. You don't need to teach someone to be selfish. And you don't need to teach someone how to steal or do whatever. They already know how. One of the earliest memories in my mind is when me and Nicholas would argue about this little patch of ground next to our old house by an oak tree. The house, and it was the only real flat space on the whole yard, just about. And I was always in a hurry to try and get outside first so I could have that little space for myself. And Nicholas would, out of spite, try to get there and get in my way. He had no idea. I just wanted to pretend to play football by myself because that's normal. Not. And he would get out there just to be spiteful and get in my way. So one day, I decided that I was going to at least get 5 minutes doing that by myself, and I proceeded to kick Nicholas off the couch and into the cabinet. Needless to say, I was the one who didn't get to go outside that day. And no one had to show me how to do that. I just thought, okay, I'm going to take this little bit for myself for a few minutes, and I'm just going to, if I cause physical pain, then maybe he'll be slow, and he won't get out there so fast. Actually, when I kicked him, he went head first into the cabinet. Of course, Nicholas always had a way of getting even with me. But anyways, and so that is just the natural way that human beings are born. They have that, for lack of a better term, selfishness completely ingrained in their own being.
I like the way Preston put it last week when he pointed at his own children and goes, "You don't have to teach them how to lie."
You don't. Who did it? Well, I didn't do it. And yeah. You stood there and watched them do it. This is from the time they're 2 or 3 years old.
Younger than that. One of my favorite tricks when I was little, me and Nicholas, when we, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, we sounded pretty similar at the time. And so whenever I would pick on Nicholas, Nicholas would yell for Mom to get assistance so I would stop. He would yell, "Mom," and Mom would say, "What?" And then I would yell, "Never mind." And it worked. Often. And so so it would continue. And there was one point he called Mom 5 or 6 times, and I just yelled, "Never mind." And eventually Mom just said, "Why do you keep calling me and saying never mind?" It wasn't until then she realized I was the one saying it. And so, yeah, you don't need to teach us to be deceitful either. And so, the point I'm going with this now is one of the things we have to consider throughout any discussion of theology is human nature and this idea of the will. The human will and this American culture, I mean, you can go, if you look at American history, going back to about the 1820s is when this started taking effect, 20s, 30s, 40s, this idea of free will started coming along. This idea that I choose the action that I want to do, free of any outside influence, and I make a good choice or a bad choice based on just my choice. That is what I want to do. Land of the free, home of the brave, all that good stuff. And that really started taking effect around the 1820s, 30s, and 40s when you have all these, when you have the abolitionist movement coming in to free the slaves. And all these Americans wanted to move west, go out and start their own life, make something of themselves and whatnot. So this idea of free will, first off, what is it? Well, I just told you, it is the idea of I make a choice, free of outside influence, to do what I jolly well please, regardless. The consequences will be what they will be. I either make a good decision or a bad decision. It's totally me.
Autonomy.
Thank you. It is autonomous. Okay. Now, is that really how a choice is made? Is it really free of influence? Allow me to conduct an experiment. Let me use Philip here. All right, Philip. Please don't be a smart aleck. I know none of this is all hypothetical here. Just bear with the experiment.
I'm glad you said that.
In one hand, I have an apple. In the other hand, I have an orange. Which would you prefer to eat?
Me?
Yes.
Neither? But that's me.
Okay. Why neither?
Because
let me rephrase that. Okay, hold on. Let me back up. You have to eat one or you will not make it to your next meal.
Apple.
Okay. Why the apple over the orange?
Well, I mean, flavor-wise, they're both about the same in my book.
Mm-hmm.
You work a lot less to get into the apple.
Okay.
Than the orange.
So
based on the fact that you said I was that hungry,
mm-hmm.
I'm going for the one that I can get into the quickest.
Okay. So we had a choice, apple or orange, and Philip chose the apple. Now,
based on an outside influence.
Based on an outside influence. He already read into me. I'd hope so anyway.
I mean,
every choice that is made is influenced. He chose the apple because it was the easiest one to get the sustenance out of in the shortest amount of time since he knew he wasn't going to make it to his next meal. Now, I had to coax that choice out of him by raising the stakes a little bit, But the same is true out of day-to-day situations. For example, why is everyone in this room going to go out that door back there instead of that one over there?
I might go out that one just because of you saying that.
Right. But again, outside influence, out of spite.
And the fact that if I'm the one locking up, I don't have my keys, so that's the only option.
Well, there's that too. Every choice that we make has an influence of some kind. Jonathan Edwards called it
bondage of the will.
Thank you. The bondage of the will. The will in and of itself does not make the choice without an influence. Joe, you used an example of a mule with oats and wheat, I think. If a mule is standing there and it has the choice of oats and either grain, I think, and both are spaced equally apart from the mule, and the mule has absolutely no preference whatsoever, no influence, nothing to make it choose one over the other, taste, distance, nothing. Everything is totally equal. That mule will stand there and starve to death. Something has to change. Something has to influence the mule to eat one or the other. One be spaced closer, it has a flavor preference, something, in order for it to make a choice. We have to have a preference, something to make us choose what we are going to do. For example, I'm going to go out that back door because it is the easiest way out to get to the vehicle. And I don't particularly want to go out those steps. Every choice you make, what you choose when you eat breakfast, the choice to come to church, something influenced your choice to come to this evening service. Something influenced you to do what it's something influenced everyone who did not come to this evening service not to come. And whatever that something was that made you make that choice was the strongest inclination, the strongest desire, the strongest influence. Something made you prefer it. An alcoholic. They know that being an alcoholic is detrimental to their health. They know that long term, they are probably going to die of alcoholism. It happens most of the time. Any addiction, really. They know that it's probably harmful to their family and friends in some form or fashion. But in that moment of choosing, in the moment that they made the choice to take the next drink, they preferred the feeling that that drink would give them, or they did not prefer the pain they would feel from the hangover, from being sober, and that caused them to take the next drink. Now, to relate this to what Paul is saying, when we are all born, we have that sinful nature inborn in within us. It comes with us. And so at the moment of choosing, prior to regeneration, every single human being, every single one, there are 7 billion people on this planet, every single one of them, at the moment of choosing is going to choose what desire they have the most. Prior to regeneration, that desire is 100% of the time sinful. Let me say that again. At the moment of choosing, prior to regeneration, every single choice, at every single moment, with every single influence, is 100% sinful. Even the good deeds, we talked about this before, even the, quote, good deeds that we do, again, keep in mind, this is prior to regeneration, even the good deeds is sinful. For example, let me find a different one than what I've been using. Okay. Prior to regeneration, for me, I'll use me again as an example. Coming to church. Why did I come here? Mom and Dad made me. You can ask them. When I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I didn't want to wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. I didn't want to come here. I wanted to sleep. I didn't have school that day. Let me sleep longer. Let me do something. Let me do what benefits me. Is there any harm, per se, in sleeping? No.
I think you just said the exact words you needed to say. What benefits me?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's the thing that we need to in all of this, that's hands down, prior to redemption taking hold in our lives, the only thing that we're out to please is us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call it free will, but it's influenced by preferences that what best serves me.
Mm-hmm.
And we follow that path until, you know, destruction. I mean, you mentioned the alcoholism. An alcoholic's not an alcoholic the first time they take a drink, or at least they don't know they are.
Correct.
But that's a selfish choice that's made. By the time that they get to the point of being an alcoholic where they have to take a drink because of a necessity rather than a desire, I mean, there are alcoholics who don't want to drink who fit the mold of what Paul's saying. Those things I do not want to do, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because their body doesn't know how to function without it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to get through life or get through a day without having that drink, because they've given over so much of themselves prior to it that the body has become dependent upon that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with sin. I mean, the body becomes dependent upon the sin that we live in. It's why you don't have to teach a child how to lie, because the first time they feel like they're in trouble, they immediately go into defense mode and say, well, it wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are worried about the consequences that might come.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's, I think, you saying it that way, it's all about them.
Yeah.
The first decision is always about how it best will benefit you.
Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, I had parents who still drug me out of bed and turned the light on and whatnot and made me come. But even when I started coming more willingly in my teenage years, heck, I thought I was doing okay. But looking back, my influence was, I didn't want to go to hell. I learned about hell. They said, hell's a terrible place. Well, I don't want to go there. Well, how do I not go there? Okay, I do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. Okay, become a robot. Well, that's not the right choice either. Or that's not the right...
It's still about you.
Exactly. It's still all about me. I don't want to go to hell, or I want to go to heaven. So long as I is involved in the statement, it's still wrong. Why do... You ask a missionary, why do you want to go to random place where you might die? Well, I want to save these people. Okay, wrong. You automatically fail. Now, can God still use that to his glory? Absolutely. Can he still use that for his benefit? Yes, he can. He used Jacob's lie, his deception, to bring about Israel. He used the sin of David and Bathsheba to bring about Solomon, excuse me. He can still use bad choices for his glory, which we'll get into that later. But the point being, it's still a sin for you. One of the things that my granny, Gertrude Weinberger, always used to say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I mean, I might tell a lie to someone, and someone say, okay, what did this person say about me? Oh, you know, they said you were great and it's awesome and you're a good friend and whatnot, when in reality they probably said they were terrible. I told the lie hoping that they would prevent a conflict, but is that still a lie and therefore still a sin? Yes, it is. That doesn't change anything. I still made a choice. The intention might have been good, but it was still a sin.
It's like special music in church.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever wants to tell anybody.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that person.
Right.
Some people just choose not to address it. But, I mean, I can think of many occasions where I've been asked, how'd I do? And I don't know how to respond to it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's how I feel every Sunday living here when people tell me I do a good job. I'm like, no, I don't. It's not about me, but I don't.
There have been several times I've done a lesson, not necessarily here, but I've done a lesson, and people will leave, and they'll shake my hand and say, good job, and I'm sitting there thinking, good job, did you listen to anything I said? Why are you not mad right now? Why are you not upset? Why are you grinning from ear to ear? There have been times I've left feeling that way. And I know I'm not the only one. But anyways, so this, so before regeneration, everything we do is sinful. It is filthy rags, to go back to Isaiah. Now, is it still a civic good deed? Will you probably still get recognized in the paper or something like that? Yeah, maybe. That paper's going to rot. It's going to burn. I got a whole trophy case full of trophies. At one point, I was so proud of, I couldn't stop smiling because we won. You can ask Mom and Dad. I still have a sore losing problem. Winning always made me happy. And I'm like, yes, we earned this trophy. We are awesome. Got in the paper and whatnot, and I don't even know where those trophies are now. I think they're in a storage building somewhere. Okay, yeah, they're still in a storage building. But now, when it comes to regeneration, when regeneration takes over, when we get to that but now part, and Christ takes over, we are justified and we start, and the process of sanctification begins. At the beginning of that process, are we going to be automatically perfect? No. No, you're not. Are you ever going to be truly, quote-unquote, perfect, per se? No, because you already sinned beforehand. The process of sanctification is just that. It's a process. And so, Paul here, he still has, as this whole section covers, he's still fighting within himself. He's been justified, yes. The process of sanctification is beginning, yes. And in his case, probably several years in the process, in the making by now. But he still has to fight that sinful nature. It's still there. He's still human. Okay, the glorification doesn't happen until Judgment Day. And so he's still having to fight this, and he's still having to fight his own mind. And so this is where he says, "For I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." There are still times when I imagine everyone here could probably look back on something they did today and think, "Why did I do that? I knew why did I don't know, fill in the blank." And they hate themselves for it. But that right there is an indicator to something to you. If you look back, see a sin that you committed, you should hate yourself for committing it. Because you just committed cosmic treason against God Almighty. You just spat in God's face all over again, and you just added a sin to that black cloud that descended on Jesus when he was crucified. Because if he died for you, then he died for that sin too that you just committed. So yeah, you should be mad. You should hate yourself. You should be like Paul here and saying, "Why did I do that? I hate myself for even thinking about doing it in the first place." There are times, again, I mean, I'll keep using myself as an example because I can't offend myself, I hope. Someone will ask me a question. I'll answer it. And then within 2 seconds, realize I gave them the wrong answer. And by then, I'm thinking, well, there's no point to go back. Well, just whatever. Why did I do that? Why did I give the wrong answer? Why did I lie right then and there? There was no point. No harm in telling the truth. Why did I do that? Why did I just spit that out? I don't know if I'm the only one that happens to, but and I'm sitting there thinking, why? Or there'll be times when I don't know, fill in the blank with one of your own stories. I'm sure we all have them.
Never ending reminder that thy grace will save for faith.
Amen.
It's a reminder that no matter how good you think we are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No matter how good we think we are, it's a constant reminder that we're not. A good analogy to that, one of the hobbies I started doing here lately is jiu-jitsu. It's a form of wrestling. It's a grappling thing. And that we're grappling or whatever. And it takes a long time to get good at it. It takes a good time to even get decent. The idea is to submit your opponent, get them in a choke or get them an arm bar, something like that. Cause them enough pain that they tap out. Okay? There are guys that have been doing it for 5, 6, 7 years at this school I go to. And, of course, they tap me in like 30 seconds. And I'm like, why did that happen? Well, after a while, after a couple months, I got my first promotion. I got the first stripe on my white belt. I thought, hey, that must mean I'm getting kind of good. I started getting a little bit of an ego. The very next class, I couldn't do anything right. Same thing like if you've ever played golf. You play golf long enough, you hate the game for a while, then you hit one ball straight, and you're like, hey, I think I got the hang of this, and then you never do it again, unless you practice for 2 years. Same thing here. The moment you think you're doing any kind of good, God will remind you just how good you really are without him. The answer is not at all. God has a way of humbling people, if you recall his parables. And so it's a constant reminder that, yes, you were justified. Yes, you can go back and recall the moment you were justified. Yes, the process of sanctification has begun. But you're not there yet. You haven't reached glorification yet. You're still on this earth, and you still have a mortal body, and you're still fighting yourself. Eventually, God will win that war. Well, okay, God has already won it, but glorification, eventually glorification will take hold. But until then, we still have to get through this life. Whether we have one more day or 100 more years, we still have to get through it first. Well, okay. So now the next three verses I'm going to read all together just to get the context in. 16 through 19. Now if I do what I do not want, I agree with the law that it is good. So now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Okay, this is continuing on with what we've been talking about so far. Paul has the desire to do good. Here's another analogy. Now, actually, Joe, I'm going to call on you for this because you're the subject matter expert here. Out of all the cases you've done, how many of them do you think woke up that morning and said they were going to do it? Mm-hmm. Well, that took my analogy and blew it out of the water. Okay.
How many of them said that they were going to face the consequences of what they were going to do?
That's better, yeah. How many of them thought they were going to get caught?
None of them thought they were going to get caught. At that moment in time, it would probably happen sometime. Sometime way off.
Well, I mean, along your line of work, how many drug addicts wake up that morning thinking they've kicked it and they're not going to touch it the next day? I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who are saying, I'm done with it, they gave it up, and then sure enough, they give in. I mean, I think that fits an addiction lifestyle more than anything. That exact description he's given right there. Because addicts don't want to do it anymore. It feels like it's a necessity rather than a need or a desire. I mean, in fact, if they want to do it, they're probably not addicted, at least in their own mind. It's when they realize they're addicted that it then becomes the problem, that they do what they don't want to do. When they accept the addiction as it being exactly that. And so you start to get into that whole mindset of, well, you know, I don't want to do this. Why do I keep going back to it? It's because they've convinced themselves they need it.
Well, but yeah, so Paul tells us here that nothing good dwells in him. And keep in mind, we're talking about the Apostle Paul, kind of a big deal. I mean, if you want to use him as an example, he's still a human, though. And the same is true of us. We are still human. Nothing good dwells in us. Need we go back to Romans 3 all over again? Need we go back to, well, pick a place. There are several places in Scripture that shows just what the human condition really is. None of them are very good. Notice I said the human condition, not the Christian condition. The human condition is totally evil in every way, shape, and form.
I mean, who showed Cain how to kill Abel?
Right. And then you have Adam and Eve. Yeah, they were deceived, but that tree was still there. They still could have walked away, but instead they decided they wanted to be like God. What does that sound like? All of every single human being, they want to be their own God. Again, that's where free will comes from. I make the choice. I do what I want. What's the thing that everyone's saying now? I'm living my best life.
You only live
one. Oh, shut up. I hate that phrase. YOLO! Yeah. Living your best life. Every time I see that on Facebook or I read that or hear someone say, I'm like, are you really? Is this really your best life? I mean, granted, it's your only one, but at the same time, if this is really the best that there is, either one of two things is true. If this is the best there is. Number one, we don't need to be sitting here because this doesn't exist. Well, I can tell you that's not the case because there's several ways to prove that God's real. Or two, where you're going ain't going to be all that pleasant. If this is the best there is. But anywho.
If they talk about the Marines on base down there, they're staying guard at the gate.
Oh dear.
And they drive up, checking everything out. And she says, it don't matter who it is or whatever. If they ask them, how's it going? How you doing? They all have the same answer. I'm living the dream.
Yep.
And that don't mean what you think it means either.
It's living
like
the dream.
A code word among them. It's like, I hate my life. I don't like this. But they can't say that.
Yep. I'm glad to see that some things have not changed.
Oh, I've said it myself many times, except I usually add another sentence after it and say, except it's a nightmare, and I wish they'd wake up.
They can't say that.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
Now, one of the things that we have to be careful of is verse 17. So now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. Okay, how many times do you think someone's read that and said, oh, well, then I can go do whatever I want, because it's not me doing it, it's sin.
I've heard that exact statement you made.
I'm sure you've heard it 1,000 times yesterday. Sure, we've all even thought about it at one point or another. Is that okay? Is that license to scream, to sing the hymn, "Oh, freed from the law, oh, blessed condition, I can sin all I want and still have remission"?
That has been a problem since day one.
No, it's not.
That has been a problem since day one. Because what was Eve's first response? What was Adam's first response? The woman that you gave me. His immediate response was, blame something God gave you. Her immediate response was, it was the serpent. It was always the sin's problem. But the sin is only alive in a living being.
The devil made me do it. How many times have we said that, let alone heard it? The devil made me do it. One thing that I've started, that actually a Millikan College professor brought to my attention, and not the one whom I thought it would be, I can't say that out loud on this recording. But anyways, he brought up a good point. We have this image of this titanic struggle between the devil and God, and they're constantly fighting each other, and we're still waiting to see who's going to win, and eventually God will win. But right now it's a tie of some kind. It's an even match. It's a tie game. No, it's not.
No.
At no point ever is that the case.
We only have to look in one place to find out that that's not true.
Right.
Just look at the first part of Job.
There's no, at no point is there any tie. At no point is Satan even close to being on the same playing field as God. Satan has no authority per se. He doesn't have to have authority. God doesn't give him authority. Okay? Let me backtrack. God doesn't give him authority. Satan runs this world, yes.
He gives him permission.
Exactly. God gives him permission. Thank you. Satan is permitted to run around wild. Satan is permitted to tempt. And God has the authority to snap his fingers and end it all right now if he wants to. And at some point, he will. When that will be, good luck. The angels in heaven don't know that one yet. But it is not... this verse is true. Okay, let me make sure that's very clear. The verse is true. It is sin dwelling within you that does the sin. But keep in mind, you're still the one doing it. Sin is still the influence. Sin is still the desire that is causing you to make a choice. And you make that choice based on the influence of your sinful nature. Okay? This is not a license to go do whatever you want. This is just explaining why you do it.
The more sin you possess.
Yeah, I think the best explanation I ever heard of this is like a virus or a parasite or something that causes a sickness.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the body, it dies. It has to be in a living body
mm-hmm.
to maintain life.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of the body, it dies. There's mm-hmm. no way for it to continue its life without something living to feed off of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with sin. Sin dies outside of the body. There's no, if someone's not alive with sin in them to commit the sin, then that sin is not an issue. In them, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it needs the living creature. But that's where the misunderstanding has come from, because is it sin living in you? Yes. But is it sin that can live on its own? No. The sin has to have a living being to reside in. And that always stuck with me, because of the parasite thing, just, it made sense. It finally clicked. When I heard that, I was like, oh, there is that. But, I mean, without the body, the sin's nothing. Mm-hmm. It needed something to take residence in.
It's not me that's committing the sin, because I am a child of God. It is the sin that lives within me that rises up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not who I am, because I am a child of God. He says that I am. Christ lives within me. But there is also that sinful nature that still
mm-hmm.
rears its head up every once in a while and reminds me that were I not a child of God, then this is what I would be.
Exactly.
So if you can, it says several times we're told, given a list of these things are a definition of who is lost and who is saved,
mm-hmm.
who has the Spirit, who lives by the flesh, who lives by the Spirit. It says if you continue in these things. It doesn't say if you commit these things, because we're all going to commit.
Right.
That's our, mm-hmm. again, that's our reminder. We're all going to commit.
Mm-hmm.
If you continue, you best be checking yourself out, because there's a problem somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it wasn't me. It was...
Exactly. That is exactly where Paul is going with all this. as we read at the beginning of the night, verses 24 and 25. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Who will deliver me from my sinful nature? Who will save me from what I really am? Verse 25. Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself serve the law of God with my mind, but with my flesh I serve the law of sin. And that's a good place to end. We will continue next week. Still doing this this little 16, 17, 18, and 19. So I guess technically we covered three verses, but we're going to backtrack and do 16 again. Questions, comments, or concerns from this evening or where we're going?
You here again next week?
No, 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Next week, unfortunately, the plant reopens and I have to go produce IV bags. I actually have to go pack them. But 2 weeks from now, I'll be back. So next week, you'll have Philip doing Revelation. Okay, so he is in chapter 9. 9
and 10 by Sunday, but we're at 9 Wednesday night, so I think, right?
And so that will be next Sunday, and then 2 weeks from tonight I'll be back here. We will pick up with verse 16. We'll backtrack to there and continue on. If... there's
no, we're starting 10 Wednesday.
Starting 10, okay. Well, if there are no questions or comments. Now to him who is able to strengthen you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ according to the revelation of the mystery that was kept secret for long ages, but has now been disclosed and through the prophetic writings has been made known to all nations, according to the command of the eternal God, to bring about the obedience of faith, to the only wise God be glory forevermore through Jesus Christ.